AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Steve Kathan. Still a lot of mystery over the weekend. U.S. military shootdowns of three unidentified objects. The most recent has the attention of Michigan Representative Elissa Slotkin.
They chose to shoot it down over Lake Huron so that we could have a chance of collecting what it was. We do not know what it is right now.
CBS News Pentagon correspondent David Martin tells us some adjustments were made after the military downed that Chinese spy balloon off South Carolina.
You don't want to scramble jets every time you pick up a bird or a piece of flying trash on your radar. So they were deliberately calibrated to screen all that stuff out. But now they've changed the calibration and they're starting to pick up these much smaller objects.
Overseas, a 4-year-old girl was rescued from earthquake rubble today in southern Turkey, but the UN says it's turning more of its attention to getting food and shelter to survivors who lost everything. CBS's Imtiaz Tayyab.
It's a tragedy that has turned grief into rage.
So this used to be your home?
Yeah.
For Arif Sinikoglu, he doesn't have time to be angry. As we stand on what used to be his family's home, he says he's too busy looking for loved ones.
We have found our grandmother here yesterday, but we cannot find our grandfather.
You will not stop until you find your grandfather.
Yeah, of course. We'll dig with our hands.
Major protest today in Israel.
Tens of thousands of Israelis gathered outside Parliament here in Jerusalem to protest the government's plan to overhaul the judicial system. They say the plan will weaken the Supreme Court and destroy Israel's democracy. It's also seen as a conflict of interest for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who is on trial for corruption. Robert Berger, CBS News, Jerusalem.
Flint, Michigan has lifted a three-day boil water advisory following the discovery last week of a break in a 24-inch transmission line. Kansas City fans love their Chiefs after yesterday's Super Bowl win.
I'm feeling wonderful. I was definitely scared. Of course, Patrick Mahomes, he's a trooper. I mean, ankle bad and everything, and he's still coming back and killing.
Quarterback Patrick Mahomes was the MVP of the game, the 38-35 come-from-behind win over Philadelphia. CBS's Steve Futterman on hand for the game.
The Chiefs certainly are the dominant team right now in the NFL. They've been in three of the last four Super Bowls. They've won two of the last four Super Bowls, and they have a great young team led by Patrick Mahomes. He is just 27, and he appears right now to be the best quarterback in the NFL.
And checking Wall Street right now, the Dow is up 287 points. This is
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Madmayer. Here's what you need to know. Two more UW branch campuses have low enrollments after the UW system absorbed their campuses 5 years ago. Faculty and students at UW Washington County and Waukesha campuses are frustrated with the lack of support from UW Milwaukee. Most branch campus faculty and instructional staff are earning less than those with the same jobs at the main campus, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The drop in enrollment numbers and the news about the UW Richland campus ending in-person classes this spring as both students and faculty worried about the future of their branch campuses. A chef who grew up cooking and eating Hmong dishes with his family in Port Edwards, Wisconsin, is now a semi-finalist for the James Beard Award's Best Chef in the Midwest. Yia Vang now runs the Union Hmong Kitchen in Minneapolis. Finalist for the James Beard Award announced March 29th. Awards given out June 5th in Chicago. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Cut. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season, From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season, and of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Shaw 101 FM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24-7 at WAUK Radio.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Hate trying to converse with me then, because all I do is text.
And that's why I call you.
Jay is a forager of funny tunes that are tangentially connected to the topic at hand. Just never turn Civic Media off.
Just have us on,
all the time. Tell Alexa, just keep it going.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the noon hour, the lunch hour of the show. We have a great show, great hour lined up at 12:30. Carrie Spivak and Daphne Chen, who are investigative reporters for Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel, are going to be joining us to talk about a report that they put out last month that was on a landlord you probably haven't heard of before. And it's someone who had over 700 different units by the time he did retire, but 6,800 different claims filed as far as bad environments and evictions and everything. And so we are going to be talking to them about that report and kind of just the underbelly of bad landlords in Milwaukee and what that can do to a neighborhood, what that can do to a community. And so I'm very much looking forward to that. But now we are joined by Arnold. Say your last name for me, Arnold. Syfax. Hold on. Are we up? Great. Arnold Syfax. Great to meet you.
Good to meet you as well.
And so I'm very excited to talk about this because Jane and I have had a couple different guests here to talk about human trafficking in the past. Mm-hmm. You are the first man that we have had on to talk about human trafficking and sex trafficking. And that is because you are actually involved in a program called, is it pronounced HEMAD?
HEMAD.
HEMAD. And so tell everyone what HEMAD is.
HEMAD stands for Human Trafficking Education to Men and Boys for the purpose of eradicating the demand for traffickers to pull women, boys, girls, just everyone.
And so, it, as a campaign, mm-hmm. how does it work? Is it advertisements? Is it how are you reaching men?
Good question. HEMAD is actually under the auspices of the Conversions Resource Center, which is a center that's geared towards assisting women to get back on track after they have left prison. It actually helps them as well with trauma, and it's kind of a trauma center for women that have been trafficked as well as women that are transitioning. With this organization, Dr. Debbie Lassiter and myself and several others came up with the idea of creating something to educate men on this, because we don't have a lot of men involved in this, because it's not really seen as a tremendously big issue on that end. But we have found that it is a tremendous issue. And the issues are because we're unaware that sex trafficking, it's not, let me put it this way. Some believe that like in Vegas, there is sex being offered, okay? And that's a business. We're not talking about women that are involved in things like that. We're talking about those who have been coerced or forced into this, those that are under the age of 16 that are told they have to do this, and their trafficker kind of romances them, or they might push them into doing this. And it's usually hitting people who are in terrible situations, like runaways or people who are destitute. And sometimes those that are coming over from other countries and they don't have any other way, and they're being tricked into it. And then there are those that are just extremely vulnerable in nice areas. Okay. It's not always, you know, the terrible areas where you're pulling people out of there, but this is happening everywhere. It's happening here in Wisconsin in all 72 counties. And because of that, we wanted to get the word out, not only to just boys and girls in high schools and things of that nature, but also to men that are out there, realizing that this is a multi-billion dollar organization.
And because, you know, as we come off the heels of the Super Bowl, I think one thing a lot of people don't realize is the amount of human trafficking that goes into supplying
people
in Arizona yesterday. And so your partner, Debbie, was there, right?
Yes, she was there along with several others, the Daughters of Destiny, I believe. I can't really think of the name of the organization, but they have kind of gathered together to go out there to do just that. And what they do is find people who have been placed in this that really want to get out and have no other way. So they have a collaboration not only with the officers that are there, but also with the FBI. And what they try to do is find ways of getting them safely away from their traffickers. And they have been successful over the years. Super Bowl is a time for, you know, celebrating this fighting or this battle of men out there on the field. And it seems like the game, who wins, who loses, is really the big piece. But the reality is, any type of activity that involves a large group of people, you're going to have traffickers there as well. Traffickers are not your, you know, your pimps with the big hats and the high heel shoes, okay? Traffickers are the ones in business suits, because it's a multi-billion dollar business, and they are selling girls, boys, kids. And some of the biggest transactions take place at events like the Super Bowl.
Yeah. We're talking to Arnold Syfax, who is a board member and leader of HEMAD, of the HEMAD campaign, which asks men to take a stand against human trafficking. And so how did you find yourself involved in this?
Well, this is really interesting, because I've been working with Dr. Debbie Lassiter with her organization for years, and just trying to assist, trying to help, trying to find financing to assist her in helping women that are transitioning, and to also help them with trauma and things of that nature. So being on the board was kind of a plus, because I can talk with philanthropic organizations that have the same mindset. And ideally, we want to be more of an upstream thinker, to find ways of not waiting for the problem to happen, but finding ways of trying to cure it. With that in mind, she thought this HEMAD piece would be great to educate men. And she wanted a face for that, that was not a woman, so that we can actually go in there as men, as males, face to face, you know, just clear. And I'm really trying to watch my words here.
Well, you can't curse, but otherwise we're pretty loose here.
sometimes men will see this as that's really, not to say that it's a woman's thing, but I don't believe the push is as strong, woman to man. And maybe it's the society that we live in. Maybe it's because of where we are. But man to man, I can go no holds bar on them, you know, and tell them, okay, this is serious and this is why. It hit me back then when I first got involved with this, when HEMAD first became an actual program. When I began to think about my own children, my grandchildren, my aunts, my uncles, and their kids, and just women in general, because I thought it was strictly women that have been trafficked. Well, I come to find out that it's not just women, but it's also men. It's also boys. It's also girls. It's a lot of people, and everyone is hit by this in every neighborhood, in every county. And it doesn't make a difference, again, if you're in the suburbs and in rural areas. Everywhere it's being hit. And what we're trying to do is to educate men on what to look for and to have them take a pledge to say that if I see something, I'm going to say something. But also to give them education if they want to go a little bit deeper to find out, so how do I recognize this? How do I see these things? And what exactly is involved in the education of human trafficking? And so with that, we kind of encourage men, and we don't get an awful lot of men jumping on board to say, I need a deep dive in this, but we do get some. And the some that we do get, they're on the ground, and they're moving, and they're letting their peers know and their circles. And so we've hit well over 12 different states, 4 different countries. We just had another country give us a call to say, we'd like to do this as well. We started off trying to get about, you know, 300 or 400 people to take this pledge. It ended up on the first day that we did that, we got 3,000 men to take the pledge. Wow. We went from there the following year, we wanted to double it. We got 6,000 men to take the pledge. And to date, as of today, we have over 65,000 men who have taken this pledge in 7 different, 4 different countries, 12 different states, and it's still growing. It's still growing.
Because the goal originally was 75,000. So you moved the goalpost.
So we haven't hit that just yet, but we are still moving for that 75,000. Hasn't gotten there just yet. But it's not just for November kickoff. It's all year round. It has moved from being a particular campaign to being a movement.
Yeah.
And this movement, the importance of it is to make change, is to get those who are able to make the change hear us. And, of course, that comes through numbers. That comes through men taking that pledge and us going to say, hey, listen, we've got over 65,000 men that have taken this pledge. We need to really make some moves on strengthening some policies, making some things a little bit easier, and understanding that this is here, and it's not just out there. It's not next door or should I say down the street. It is next door.
Yeah.
You know, and it could be in your house or in your family, and you just may not be aware of it. Again, trafficking has to do with coercion and force. It doesn't have to do with someone saying, I want to do this. And it's hitting the LGBTQ community. It's hitting runaways. It's hitting everyone.
Absolutely.
And so we want to let men know that we can have a part in this.
So we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, I know Jane has a question, but I also want to hear more about what that education actually looks like,
mm-hmm.
and how, in your experience so far, how men are receiving it.
Okay.
As far as if there's a little bit of denial at first or kind of what that's like. But mm-hmm. our guest this segment is Arnold Syfax, who is a board member and leader of the HEMAD campaign, which asks men to take a stand against human trafficking. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
What we got is beyond all that. You know we got that real thing. Gonna be the object of some hating. But we gonna be all right. We gonna be all right. Making love after every fight. Girl, from the day I put that ring up on your hand, in front of friends and fam, I had a plan. And my plan is to be a good man, good man. Good as all I wanna be. Yeah. Son of me, baby. Son of me.
The bakers of Country Hearth and Village Hearth Breads are proud to support local education with Loaves for Learning, the program that makes it easy to earn money for your school. Enjoy Country Hearth and Village Hearth all-natural breads, buns, bagels, and more, then save the UPC from the package for your school to collect and redeem. Each is worth 5 cents and can be used for books, computers, sports, music, whatever your school needs, up to $10,000 a year. Learn more at loavesforlearning.com. Country Hearth and Village Hearth Breads, baking our best for you.
Knucklehead CBD and Vapes is now online at knuckleheads.shop. Step into your favorite smoke shop without leaving your home. Find grinders, papers, Delta 8, and more, all from your computer or phone. With free shipping on all orders over $50, you'll be sure to find exactly what you like. You can also order for in-store pickup, so there's no wait. Knucklehead CBD and Vapes.
Visit Knuckleheads Milwaukee at 2949 North Oakland Avenue.
Order online today at knuckleheads.shop.
Look through your children's eyes, and you will discover the true magic of a forest.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Sunny skies and calm this afternoon with a high of 46. West winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Tonight, lows level off around 30. Overcast skies tomorrow, scattered rain showers likely. High temperatures reach up to 48. Mid-40s Wednesday, turning much cooler Thursday with highs in the upper 20s and snow possible. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Hite. Currently, it's 39 degrees.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry and Jane Madnair. We are talking to Arnold Syfax, who is the board member and leader of HEMAD campaign, which asks men to take a stand against human trafficking. And Jane, I know you had a question.
I do. Arnold, I can only imagine that there's some kind of pushback because there have to be some men who believe that I'm paying for this.
She's saying that there's men who give pushback because they're saying I'm paying for this.
She wouldn't do this if she didn't want to do it, or he wouldn't do this if he wouldn't want to do it. It's a business transaction. We're all adults here. Everything is fine. How do you address that with these men who want to push back against the fact that some of these people are being forced to do this?
Well, generally, we try to let them know that this is not like a legal thing. If you go to your bachelor party or whatever, and you have these women coming over and they pay XYZ dollars for this, for them to come and do their lap dance or whatever else, letting them know that there are some women that are in this and they were not forced or coerced to be involved in this. What I'm speaking to are those women who have been coerced and forced into this lifestyle. They have traffickers that have told them that this is what you need to do. So what I try to explain to men is that we're not talking about legal. We're talking about the illegal women and men that are involved in this, that have been forced into this by whatever reason, and regardless of the circumstances, that it is not right. And to express to them and let them know that these people that are involved in sex trafficking, they could very well be part of your own family. And trying to really express to them that it is important that we recognize that this is an evil. This is a travesty. This is something that is not a good thing. And yeah, I know I've heard men say, hey, well, you know, we've paid our money to have this person come over and to do this, that, and the other. And I don't want to say that's fine, but I will say if that's a legitimate organization that's doing this, we need to do a deeper dive to find out, okay, are these people being trafficked? We just need to be in the mindset that the possibility is there that these are not people that are willing participants in this act. And so that is kind of what I try to give to men give some pushback on it, just to let them know that this is a travesty. It is a crime.
And so with that, what are some, as far as the education goes, because I'm sure there's more than we can cover in the next 5 minutes, but what are some of the signs that you tell men to look for as far as being able to be alert and aware of someone who might be there by force, whether that's physical, mental, psychological, or someone who is there who's as a sex worker, or someone who's there because this is their job?
In most cases, you're going to see some signs of bruises. You're going to see some signs in their character that might reflect not just shyness, but paranoia. I mean, there are a variety of things to look for, and without getting too deep in the weeds, we try to bring those that really want to know into the office to give them that full training, because there are different types of traffickers. You need to know what kind of trafficker is trafficking this person, and that will reflect why they respond certain ways. If you see an older man and a young girl out somewhere, and it seems like there's something that's not quite right, we don't say, jump over there, get involved, and start questioning. We say, keep an eye on it, and if it looks like something that may be, you know, off kilter, there are some numbers that you can call. There are some places that you can contact. And the hotline that's out there, you can call them and say, well, I am suspicious of this particular act because it doesn't look right. It doesn't sound right. And I'm not talking about grandpa out with his niece. I'm talking about something that might look a little bit different. And there are some things that we try to educate them on a face-to-face if they want to get a little bit deeper. Of course, I can't tell you everything to look for because we're not the only ones listening, right? Trust me, traffickers are listening as well. Like, okay, so what are they looking for? So we need to not do that because they're going to know this. So it's kind of difficult to really give you this is what you look for over the radio. It would be a lot easier on a face-to-face, or you can actually go to the site, or you can send an email also to the Conversions Resource Center site. When you go to the Conversions Resource Center site and go right under HEMAD, you can actually email myself or the administrator that takes care of the emails and ask those hard questions and even ask for what to look for. If I have seen something, you know, in my neighborhood that doesn't look right, this is what you can do. These are the numbers you can call.
Absolutely. And so where, with the minute that we have left, where can people, what's the website that people should go to? And we'll put it in today's show notes as well.
You should go to conversionsresourcecenter.org, and it's spelled completely out, no spaces. And then you can go right to HEMAD, which is on that site as well. You hit that. And then we encourage all men to take that pledge that's on there.
You're only 10,000 away from the goal.
Right. And if they want to take that pledge, they can do that online, or I can read it real quick and they can raise their hand right while I'm speaking, and you can insert your name. You can say, I and your name pledge to eradicate or to educate men on the importance of ending human trafficking. We of HEMED pledge to work to eradicate the business of human trafficking for our women, our men, and for the world. It is my duty not to stand by and let the industry of human trafficking benefit off the backs of the innocent. Therefore, I pledge my heart, my body, my mind, my soul, my spirit to eradicate an industry that seeks to destroy life rather than build it up.
Well, here to that. Arnold Syfax, thank you so much for joining us today. This is very enlightening. We will put all of that information in today's notes. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Always stay humble and kind.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Still not much known about the most recent U.S. military shootdown of an unidentified object. Michigan Representative Alyssa Slotkin.
It was shot down over water, and Lake Huron has been choppy, so it's been difficult to recover. There's a joint U.S.-Canadian effort to make sure we keep eyes on that equipment and pick it up.
Recovery efforts are back on for the Chinese spy balloon off South Carolina. More rescues today in the earthquake zone. Berku Baldov is a Turkish healthcare worker.
Super dangerously collapsed, so you cannot just go inside. And you should be really careful also not to harm the people inside. So we are like kind of, we say in Turkey, we are digging with our nails. One by one, slowly.
The morning after the Chiefs beat the Eagles to win the Super Bowl, Commissioner Roger Goodell was looking ahead.
Las Vegas, you are now on the clock.
Las Vegas hosting next year for the first time. CBS News Brief. I'm Steve Kathan.
WAUK 540 AM. Franklin's Choice for News Talk Radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. The jets that shot down the unidentified object over Lake Huron yesterday came from Madison. The F-16s belong to the Minnesota Air National Guard, but happened to be at Truax Field. It's the third time in as many days an unidentified object was shot down by U.S. forces in North American airspace. The object was spotted flying over Wisconsin for a time this weekend. The F-16s destroyed the object about 15 miles off Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Wisconsin election officials are testing voting machines before next week's primary election. A public voting machine test was held in Madison Saturday to give voters confidence in the system. Wisconsin voters will narrow the field of state Supreme Court candidates to two a week from tomorrow. Early voting for the primary is open through Sunday. In sports, ESPN reports the New York Jets are asking the Packers about trading for quarterback Aaron Rodgers. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold, 1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003. 125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football. You're about to find out. Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday mornings at 8 on The Shaw and on the Civic Media app.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. And we are now on the air in Waukesha. Live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at TheRickSmithShow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
Pat, I feel like all the women we have on our show, like our co-hosts, always get too famous for us. And then
I would just like to think that we are fertile ground from which they can blossom. We are the manure from which they spring.
The manure from which they spring. I was going to say holding fort, but I think your metaphor is way better.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
Being a father is an honor, a challenge, a duty, a celebration, and a testimony. I want to be legendary for you because I found everything to live for.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Price on my soul. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. No matter where you're listening across the Civic Media Network or on the Civic Media app, thank you for spending your lunch hour with us. And a quick reminder that if you miss any part of today's show, you can always listen to it as a podcast, which you can find at asgoeswisconsin.com/listen or wherever you find podcasts, Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, etc. And so moving on to our guest this half hour. So last month, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel published an investigative report on a landlord who over 20 years became the second largest evictor in the city. He racked up roughly 6,800 building code violations and prompted multiple lawsuits and complaints to state and local officials. But
What they also expose is that this isn't an isolated case. And so here to talk more about the impact of landlords, what they can do to communities, our guests this half hour are Daphne Chen, who is a data and investigations reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Carrie Spivak, who is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who focuses on white-collar crime, gambling, landlords, slumlords, and other issues. Welcome to the show, guys.
Good to be here.
So I guess let's start with the focal point of the report. Who is Curtis Hoff?
Curtis Hoff is a name that a lot of people didn't know before last month. Yep. Even somebody like Carrie, who has been reporting on landlords in Milwaukee for a very long time. He is the former owner of Anchor Properties and the group of LLCs that owned hundreds of properties across Milwaukee, mostly in Black neighborhoods and low-income neighborhoods. And it's the company that sort of quietly amassed this rental empire and became the second largest evictor in the city. But very much a low-key person here in Milwaukee.
And that was what was wild reading the report, is despite these 6,800 building code violations and other lawsuits, that when you guys started reporting on this, Mayor Johnson didn't even know who he was, despite, and he was on common council for how long, as far as no one knew him.
Yeah, that actually was somewhat surprising. You'd think the mayor and former alderman would know who he is. He was known by the building inspectors. We knew who he was. But he didn't get a lot of publicity because he had some other, albeit smaller, slumlords who were getting more attention, like Mohammed Chowdhury and Elijah Muhammad Rashid. Maybe their stuff was more outrageous, but for whatever reason, they were getting more publicity. And Barada, of course, I don't know if we'd call him a slumlord, but he has 8,000 to 9,000 units. So, and he was growing at a, and still is growing at an amazing pace. So all that allowed Hoff to kind of remain in the shadows, and Hoff never went out of his way to get out of the shadows. He didn't even name the company after himself. He used the A names the reason he used that, as we noted, was back in the day, if you were in eviction court, they would call the companies by alphabetical order of the plaintiffs. So that's why he came up with a Anchor, Aardvark, et cetera. But overall, he was just pretty low key. He's not big on the social scene, not big politically, and just kept out of the way, kept, you know, and did that until we really wrote him up, which unfortunately was after he sold his stuff, though.
I know that is, and now is retired in Phoenix in an almost $1 million house, which is also infuriating. But so paint the picture, because I think, Carrie, was this one of the days I feel like I was in the newsroom and you were just explaining, having gone to one, I don't know if it was one of his or just a unit in general, as far as being in some of these apartments and how like the inhumane condition that they were in.
Oh, yeah, some of them are just awful. You'll see, you know, the torn windows and screens, and, you know, you might be a second story or third story, and there could be little kids there, holes in the walls. You may not have hot water, outlets that don't work, or then you'll see, Daphne knows this better than I do, they'll overload the outlets, which is causing a fire hazard. Fire alarms that may or may not be there. There was one, this was a Hoff unit that we went to where you had two units. And if I remember right, if both doors open, it blocked off one unit from escaping, which would be god awful in a fire. You kind of get hardened after seeing it so much, but still it's, you know, it's pretty bad. I mean, it's just, there's no other way to describe it.
I mean, obviously, yeah, Carrie, you've been doing this for years, but Daphne, was it something for, I mean, you've also been doing this for, because you wrote a report back in 2021 as far as being a part of the investigative team with the taxpayers basically funding slumlords to not fit, that like causing electrical fires and not fixing some of these things. And so have you grown accustomed yet to having to see some of these awful conditions, or is it still something that's a little shocking to walk into?
No, and thanks for mentioning that, because it's a great testament to all the reporting on landlords that a lot of reporters here do really well at the Journal Sentinel. But yeah, like it still was really shocking to see these conditions, especially when children, little children are living in these conditions. And you really get the sense that whoever is, you know, renting these out really does not care to make it habitable or safe. Because we're talking about like giant holes on the porch. Porches, you know, moms describing having to pull kids off of porches and say, you can't play there because you're going to fall and hurt yourself. You know, we've had women talk about having their PTSD triggered because they can't sleep at night because of the sounds of how many rodents there are scrabbling around in the walls, you know, moms crying, like starting to cry while they interview with us and just walking onto the porch so that their kids don't see them. The conditions and how dangerous they were and the effect that they had on the families was really stark to see.
We're talking to Daphne Chen and Carrie Spivak, investigative reporters from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, on their reporting on landlords, specific landlord Curtis Hoff, but also landlords in general who are exploitative. Is that the right word to use as far as how, or predatory? And so can you explain a little bit more about the cycle of both the demographics and the cycle of people who find themselves living in not only anchor properties, but there are, I mean, I think what part of this report was also listing out the 25 top evictors in Milwaukee. And what are some of the reasons why people you've interviewed can't get out of this cycle of living in a slumlord's apartment?
Well, one, you just mentioned the evictions. These guys do not charge cheap rent. People are paying $800, $1,200 for a rental. And you can go in a lot of other neighborhoods and get a much nicer place for the same money. But if you've been evicted, it makes it very tough for you to find a new place. Even if you've been evicted, sued for eviction, and won the case and you were not evicted, unless you get the judge to take that your name to seal the record, that eviction stays on your record. Landlords routinely go to CCAP and they check before they'll rent to you whether you have any evictions. A lot of landlords will not rent to you if you have an eviction. Hoff and some others will rent to you. And they kind of got you locked because you have an eviction. You know it's going to be very tough for you to move out. Maybe you'll complain about the hole in the wall or this and that, and they don't come running out to fix it. But what are you going to do? You can't find another place because you have that eviction hanging over your head. And yeah. That stays on, I believe, for 2 years unless you get the judge to dismiss it.
And just to clarify, it is even in the case where the eviction doesn't go through, but even the attempt to evict you goes on your record.
And that's all they look at. They don't open up the file. You'd have to make a motion to the judge to seal the file. And actually, I'm wrong. I think they stay on pretty much forever unless you get it taken off. So you'd have to get the judge to seal it. If you have an attorney or a legal aid or legal action, they'll do that. But it means another trip to the courthouse, which if you're the working poor, isn't the easiest thing in the world. But, you probably don't even realize it. Unless you have a lawyer, went to legal aid or legal action, you're not even going to realize you could get it off your record.
And to further that comes the reporting of these terrible conditions, right? And that the underreporting of how bad some of these apartments are is because people are afraid of the retribution of getting evicted if they report on their landlord, correct?
Yeah, we detailed a couple of cases where tenants strongly felt that they were retaliated against, that basically, as soon as they reported the issues to the city, to the Department of Neighborhood Services, which is what you're supposed to do, that they were evicted within weeks after that. And we found about 40 cases just looking at the data. Retaliation is very difficult to prove, and it's not something that the city enforces well, but it is illegal. And that just kind of compounds the problems because issues aren't getting reported. People are afraid to be homeless. And on top of that, like even when they do get reported, we found that enforcement really was a little bit lacking, that, you know, things would be fixed supposedly, but in a shoddy manner, and the problems would just continue.
Was the focal point of the big piece, but he is not the only property owner. He's no one. Now he's retired and he's sold off his property. So who are some of the people kind of on the watch list as far as that are continuing these practices? Like, who did he sell his properties to?
A lot of his properties went to out-of-state landlords, and there's still questions on them. There's been a big influx of out-of-state landlords buying up properties in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee area in specific, in the past few years. Some of them are pretty awful. Some of them not so bad. I don't know if any of them are really great, but, you know, not all are awful, but a lot are being sold on that. It's a good business, a profitable business, especially if you're not putting money into the properties. You're still getting $1,000 a month or so. And if you're not, and, you know, maybe you bought the place, definitely, I'm sure, you know, well under 100, probably closer to 40 or 50. It's not that hard to make money, especially if you're not going to care for it. Now, if you can put money into the place and fix it up, you can still make money, probably just not as much. But I've known some landlords, including some of the other staters, who appear to be fixing up the places. You know, they're not, you know, AAA good, but they're definitely livable and they're making money. So it is possible to make money and be an honest or decent landlord.
So when we come back, I want to talk more about kind of the history of how we got here, that landlords have as much power as they do. Because I know, Carrie, even just last week, you wrote an article on Barada, the number one evictor right now, basically scaring off aldermen from off his back. And so there's a certain amount of power landlords have. And I think it dates back to a certain governor and how things and regulations got rolled back for landlords. And so I want to talk a little bit more about the history of that when we come back, and also what could change either legally, locally, or on the state level to strengthen tenant rights. But we are talking to Carrie Spivak and Daphne Chen, investigative reporters from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Laugh up with things he can see, but it just cannot touch. I'm not about to move to no other place.
The Civic Media team would like to say congratulations. More than 200 Wisconsin businesses and nonprofits are receiving a free advertising campaign through our one-day $1 million advertising giveaway. If you missed out, our local sales team would still love to help you with your own campaign. Go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. Again, civicmedia.us and sponsorship. New and still growing. Advertise today with a Civic Media network of radio stations.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. And we are now on the air in Waukesha. Live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
Plenty of people start something great in their 40s and 50s. Getting your retirement savings on track is no different. Go to aceyourretirement.org and in 3 minutes you'll get personalized tips to help boost your retirement savings. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
My Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take,
but early detection allowed us to take control of the situation together.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Sunny skies and calm this afternoon with a high of 46. West winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Tonight, lows level off around 30. Overcast skies. Tomorrow, scattered rain showers likely. High temperatures reach up to 48. Mid-40s Wednesday, turning much cooler Thursday, with highs in the upper 20s and snow possible. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 39 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24-7 at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are talking to Carrie Spivak and Daphne Chen, investigative reporters from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, about their report from last month, and I guess really spanning back years as far as how long they've been talking about landlords in Milwaukee and specifically predatory landlords. And I guess broadly, how is this legal? Like, how are there so many of these guys, because it seems like a lot of them are guys, that don't have any ramifications for treating people so poorly?
Well, there's a couple of things. Back in around 2010, the legislature, which at the time, stories that I did with Mary Spicuzza, had 20% or so of the legislators were in fact landlords, including Robin Voss, who is a very large landlord.
Wait, Carrie, how many? What?
About 20% of all the legislators were landlords.
No conflict of interest there.
I haven't checked it since then, but my guess is it's still the same. And including Robin Voss, who had 23 properties mostly in Whitewater, worth about $4 million. And that's when, in about 2010 or so, the legislature passed a series of laws that limited the powers of tenants and increased the powers of landlords. And they, among other things, they limited amount of fines, where the cities used to be able to continually double the fines and keep inspecting. I believe they outlawed just those surprise targeted inspections that would be real popular in a college town. And you would just say, we're going to do this block because, you know, that's where the kids live. But you can do lower income neighborhoods, all that type of thing. So it was kind of the landlord's legislature, and they opened, you know, there were bad landlords before that, but those actions made it tougher for the cities and for tenants to police the landlords.
And that rolls down, right? Since that's the state law, it's not even like the common council in Milwaukee can make laws to get around that.
It's very difficult. I mean, there are things that the city can do and probably should be doing better, but the state laws are really, really restrictive. I mean, one of the things to add to what Carrie was saying was that, Ashanti Hamilton, who was president of the Common Council, told us a lot of the landlords that they dealt with that were negligent, they just kind of pay the fines as part of the cost of doing business, because the state also limits how much the fine is. So when you were asking, you know, how can this be legal? A lot of that equation is just because the enforcement power is so weak.
We started off the show talking about the derailment that just happened in Ohio. And that was the exact same phrase as far as the companies that are profit seeking. It's just they bake that into their budget if they'll have to pay some fines. But it's cheaper to continue to do the unsafe things that they're doing that lead to poisonous materials spreading everywhere than to just incur the fine. And it sounds like it's wild in the same show to hear the exact same thing when we're talking about slumlords. And it's just, well, it's easier to pay the fine than to fix the building.
Absolutely.
And there's one other thing, too, is tenants are afraid of being evicted. Many tenants are afraid of complaining because they, even though it's ridiculous, even though it's illegal, they're afraid that the response will be an eviction. And what's gotten very popular in recent years is the 28-day month-to-month lease, where you used to have more and more people signing year-long leases. Now, both around UWM, Marquette, and then in the poor neighborhoods, the month-to-month is real popular. So you don't even need a reason. You just say, I'm not renewing your lease. So tenants are afraid to call the DNS or authorities.
So as far as, speaking of tenants, because I know part of the report was also trying to provide resources for people who, if you are getting evicted, what to do. And so what is available for people as far as resources, organizations, groups, rights?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Milwaukee does have, they create a kind of like what's supposed to be a one-stop shop for like tenants who need help. It's called the Rental Housing Resource Center, and all the sort of legal organizations, government agencies, like nonprofits that deal with landlord-tenant issues are all kind of centralized here. So that would probably be the best stop, first stop. And there are also some more like grassroots organizations, like there's this Milwaukee Autonomous Tenants Union. They're more so kind of a grassroots volunteer organization trying to help tenants organize. So there are resources out there, and they have helped some of the tenants that we wrote about, you know, file lawsuits and things like that. But as far as rights go, it is important for tenants to know that, you know, they have the right to live in a safe, clean space. And especially, you know, if they're paying rent, that's part of the landlord's deal to uphold. And so, you know, if that's not happening, like one right that is afforded by law is rent abatement or rent withholding. And it's not something that's popularized very much by the city. But theoretically, if the landlord is not fixing things that need to be fixed, you can withhold part of your rent through and pay it instead to the city of Milwaukee. And the landlord will not get that money until the fixes are made. But this is kind of a difficult process to go through. It requires approval from the city. But I just say this to say that there are options and renters do have rights.
And so briefly, because we only have 2 minutes left, I guess, is there solutions in reporting this that may not be available right now, but as far as what could help this? Is it only from this at the state level?
I would say that that is the biggest thing. Like if you ask experts in housing, they say the gold standard is to basically allow municipalities to once again do systemic rental inspections, proactive rental inspections. But barring that, just at the city level, you know, stuff like I just mentioned, like popularizing that rent abatement program could be really helpful. I know the city of Racine is kind of kicking that off as well in their city. And also just the Common Council, they've been debating for a long time now about things like requiring landlords to have insurance, which experts feel could really help renters, because then when things like fires happen, they really get investigated and we find out if neglect is the root cause of things like that.
Absolutely. Well, I just want to take this opportunity to say thank you for the investigative reporting that you both do, and a plug to be a subscriber to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, because this is the kind of reporting that they do so well. And so this, go read this. I will link it to today's show notes because it is unbelievable reporting. Thank you so much, Carrie and Daphne, for spending time with us and breaking the story down further.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that'll be do it for the noon hour. When we come back, we will be talking about more with the elementary school that is doing a little outdoor work. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You better call if you're interested. Trailer for Rent. Trailer for Rent. Trailer for Rent.
Hey, everybody. How we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.